The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15, or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I am Will Anderson and guest Charlie, Gareth Reynolds. It's a Garfop.
Garfop, like you labeled the Zoom meeting.
The Zoom meeting that I really had a lot of trouble locking in. I was actually, funnily enough, I've got a little dollop day. So I did a DoFOP with Dave Anthony this morning.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then I had the Garfop with you immediately afterwards. And between me trying to schedule those two things, because you are just in slightly different time zones and I was trying to work out different times of day, and then Dave threw a random, like, into the mix where, like, he sent me a time that was going to be 4 o'clock in the morning for me, and then I assumed I was wrong and, like, couldn't find, like, you know when you go to the internet going, I assume I'm wrong, but all information on the internet tells you that you're right, and you're like, well, this can't be right, though. The internet's wrong also. I can't take this information.
I refuse to have this.
So anyway, there was some do-si-do when it came to scheduling. That's all I would say.
That sounds like Dave. Dave will be like locked into a time for a week and a half, and then he'll be like, can you do 8 a.m. the next day? And I'll be like, wait, but the whole... One time, there was a guy we were meeting with about doing like a dollop show, and Dave had been like, I was working on a show at the time, so Dave had kind of been like saying, you know, well, we got to meet this guy and everything. So I go, okay, well, if you guys can come to like where, near where I work, we could do 12:30. He's like, great, sets it up, everything, right? I walk into the place, the dude, recognizes me, and he's like, hey, and I'm like, oh, hey. I sit down, we shoot the shit, you know, we're talking, we're kind of talking about Dave, you know, like common friend, we're like throwing him under the bus. It's like 10 minutes, I text him like, you close? You know, or something. And he goes, oh, yeah. And I go, okay. So we keep talking. Another literally 15 minutes until me and this dude are just like, I mean, like, I'm like, I can't be here all day. I'm like, I don't know where the fuck this dude is. What close means to Dave. And so we order food. I text him again. Don't hear back. Then I'm just like, well, I wouldn't order. Now we're eating. And we just eat a lunch together. And we loosely talk about what we're there to talk about. And then we're done. And then I call him and I just go, what the fuck? He goes, what? I go, where were you? He goes, for what? I go, that lunch. I said, are you close? You said, yeah. He goes, oh, I thought you were doing a bit. I was like, well, what kind of weird bit is like, what kind of bit is that? And he never showed up and we never met with the guy again. It makes no sense.
I mean, was he trying to set you up with this guy? That's what it feels like.
I dated the guy for 2 months.
This sounds like classic blind date behavior, you know.
He Dave trapped me. He did the Dave trap.
Yeah, like blind Daved.
Yeah, he blind. Yeah, I went on a blind Dave.
He was shooting a pilot for a new show.
Yeah.
You've been blind Daved.
He gets two people to meet up and have a lunch together and see if there's any sparks.
Yeah, but he's in a studio the whole time. Like, the whole thing is being filmed in real time.
Yeah, it's like parked.
He's in a studio, great. And he's just like, I've just got a text message from him. It says, you close, question mark.
You close. I'm going to write back.
Oh, yeah.
Got him. Nailed his ass.
Yeah, close to jizzing in my pants at how good this show's going.
I got a spinoff idea. Yeah. So I get it. That happens a lot. Because Dave does so much work for the show. Like, there are times where I just go like, okay, I got to like meet him, you know, like whatever he wants, whenever he wants to record, let's do it, you know?
But also I think, and I'm with like this with Charlie, he has a kid. So once like there's a child in the mix,
true.
Like there's like a marriage and a child and things like that. You just, I don't know, but I feel like I get to make myself the most important person in my life all the time. You know, once you have a child, like you're only the second most important person in your own life. Like your child is now the most important person in your life. And so I feel like occasionally when I reach out to a Charlie or a Dave, that they can feel like they're the most important person in my life, that I can put aside my needs for their needs in a way that they're just not getting at home.
Yeah, no, for once they know what respect is like again. They're like, I'm respected for a second. This is amazing.
What time do you want to do it? I'll accommodate your needs.
I'm open all day. I'll accommodate you. The other thing is that, like, if I ever have parameters, like if I'm like, hey, can we do it before like 8 o'clock? Like, if he digs around as to why, it's sports normally. And like, it's just so easy to carve through that. I'll be like, well, there's just a basketball game I wanted to watch. He's like, you can record. You know, I'm like, yeah, I can record it for sure. Yeah, it's totally cool. Yeah, that makes total sense. So yeah, all my things are like childish. Yeah, mine are like, I was going to play Connect Four with my neighbor, but yeah, you're right.
I mean,
you're right.
The biggest flex of that is I'm free all day. If at any stage you send back, I'm free all day, it sounds like you're being accommodating, but it is absolutely 100% also a statement about your lifestyle choice. Like, inherent is I don't have responsibilities, man. I made different choices. So
literally whenever. Nothing depends on me. My cat has a feeder. It's got water that bubbles. Everything's just literally now 12 hours. You name it. Anytime in between.
Depends how stoned you want to catch me.
I'll get up at 4 a.m. I'll get up at 4 a.m. if you need me. I don't. Whatever. I'm going to be up for an hour and a half. Go to bed. Boom.
Go back to bed. I might not leave my bed. I'll just do this from bed.
Yeah. It's perfect.
It's fine.
Yeah. No, that is the truth. But you're like me, where like your career becomes your child. You know, right. You're that becomes the thing that
sad, terribly sad.
Obviously sad. No, I want this to turn sad. but that becomes your commitment.
So why every Christmas, Amy and I get one of those family photos with the dogs, the cat, and my career. We just,
well, by the way,
put them up on the wall.
You just backhanded me in this. You trumped me because you obviously have someone in your life. You brought Amy into it. You didn't need to bring her up. We were on the same team. Now you've just done that.
I mean, she'd prefer that I didn't bring her into it, I imagine, as well.
Well,
so.
But still, unfortunately, it's a feather in your cap. Again, I have a cat. That's it. That's the highlight.
Okay. So thank you for doing this. It's very nice to see you.
Oh,
we haven't
had
a chat for a little while. So... you guys are meant to be coming to Australia. Hopefully you will get to come to Australia for the Dollop Down Under. Tickets on sale for Australia and New Zealand. You'll probably come down because you'll be able to go to New Zealand.
Yeah.
They're fine. They're on top of everything.
Well, are they? Dave alluded to the fact that maybe you guys had given him a nip yesterday.
Gave
him a little rip.
Sounds like
quick.
Us.
Yeah. When he went in there, they couldn't distinguish either. And then they, you know, let him in and he was just...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Some not again.
Brown cardigan shit going on or something.
Oh, no. I really don't want us to be responsible for fucking up their shit. Like,
no.
Like, they're cool, New Zealand. Like, you win no brownie points for beating up on New Zealand. People like Taika Waititi and what you do in the shadows. And the, like, New Zealand cricket team just won the World Championship of Cricket against, like, India, a country that's, like, 100 times as big in population and budget. Like, it's a good time for New Zealand. They're progressive. They've got, like, a prime minister who's in the front of, like, social and cultural issues. They handled, like, COVID extremely well as a society. They're making reconciliation with their native people in a way that's instructive for other, you know, people all around the world. Like, you know, Rhys Darby went back there. Jermaine Clement lives there. I mean, they were courted by Hollywood. They could live anywhere. They're superstars. They're living in bloody New Zealand.
And they let in one Australian who...
One bloody Australian fucking up their shit
there,
yet again.
All up. Just had to do it. Yeah. No, I agree. Well, I mean, we're hopeful for sure. I mean, I think it's obviously like... It's just amazing how inept every world leader is in so many different ways. And so there's like watching Scott Morrison, like, you know, play his role has been fun from afar. It's like hot potato. Do you guys play hot potato there? Probably not.
I mean, explain to me what hot potato is.
Well, it's not really much of a game, but it was like you'd throw a thing, like a potato it was supposed to be, but you go hot potato, two potato, three potato, four, and then you go five potato, six potato, seven potato more, and then whoever's holding the potato is out, and then you do another. It's like musical chairs, but with a potato. That's one of those things where I was starting, and I'm like, he's not going to know what hot potato is, and I'm going to describe it. And it's going to sound so crazy.
Well, here's the thing. The Wiggles have a song called Hot Potato, I'm pretty sure. Hot Potato, right? So I know the reference from the Wiggles song, but as far as I was aware, I didn't know that that was maybe about a game. I'm going to Google the lyrics to the Wiggles' Hot Potato and see if it is about game Hot Potato or whether it is about a hot potato. Because I just always assumed, because they also have a song called Cold Spaghetti, right? So I assumed that hot potato was, okay, I'm going to find out.
They had a whole culinary thing. Well, just so you know, I should know the answer to this because I dressed up as a Wiggle for many children's birthday parties. So
I did not know that you'd also.
Not to name drop that early.
Which Wiggle? What color Wiggle were you?
I'm pretty sure I was the blue Wiggle mostly.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
And then I actually think I wore white gloves once as one of the Wiggles because I didn't really know what they looked like and it was for a different costume. So they were probably all like, wow, this is like OCD Wiggle. All right. Let's play Don't Touch the Kids.
This guy looks like a Wiggle fucked a Smurf. That's what's going on here.
I'm Papa Wiggle. How is everyone? By the way, Papa Wiggle was a name I worked under 20 years ago, got in a little trouble. This is full circle for me. So Papa Wiggles is back.
Okay, here are the lyrics to Hot Potato by the band The Wiggles, the popular Australian band The Wiggles. Hot potato, hot potato, hot potato, hot potato. Hot potato, hot potato, 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 potato.
That's good. That's good. That is really good. Now how is it that made my song that I sang sound like Bohemian Rhapsody?
Well, this is the second verse. That was only the first verse.
Okay, great.
Cold spaghetti, cold spaghetti. What? Cold spaghetti, cold spaghetti.
This is the same song?
Same song. Cold spaghetti, cold spaghetti, cold spaghetti, cold spaghetti. Cold spaghetti, cold spaghetti, 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 spaghetti. Oh, jiggy, jiggy, jiggy.
What's happening now?
Jiggy, jiggy, jiggy. Give me that, give me that, give me that food. Oh, jiggy, jiggy, jiggy.
This took a real Will Smithian turn all of a sudden. Give me dat.
Well, I've said dat. It's actually give me dat.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, this is definitely like they've brought in like someone
Cardi
to come
B.
In and rap.
Cardi
in.
B.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, Cardi B jumped in. Yeah. She's like, got that whap. She's like, I got that wet ass potato. Well, I've looked up mine, and it's exactly what I said. Oh, no. You pass it around right to your right, so you keep passing it in a circle, and the song stops, so that's how it's musical chairs like potato.
Right.
But it says it's a party game, and and you use a beanbag or a potato while the music plays. So I guess it's safe to say that both of our nations have come up with really great potato entertainment. Potainment.
It's interesting, I guess, that the potato is such a versatile food, right? It's a staple, potato.
Yes.
You know, I love potato.
I love potato.
I think
you're a farm boy. You must love potato. You were probably eating raw tubers as a boy.
Well, I mean, you know what? Like, there was a place near us, not exactly where we live, but a place called Thorpedale, which was a famous potato town. And, like, every time I go through Thorpedale, because I know it's a famous potato town, it's kind of on the way, you know, back to where I live, I will go and get some potatoes. I'm just like, you know what? If you're going to go and buy some potatoes, even if I don't need some potatoes, like sometimes I will just buy potatoes in Thorpedale. And then if I just see somebody who might like potatoes, I will pass on those potatoes to them.
Wow. That is, you're a real Thorndalian, it sounds like. You're Santa Taters.
I mean, you know what I am? I'm just like, sometimes I'm just like, these are good potatoes and people should know how good
you're
these potatoes
Robin
are.
Spud.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so I do this show with my mother, like where basically I just try to make, it's just a weird half hour show that I basically do on my YouTube. And one of the more prevalent themes is how my mother will glean food from farmers' plots. Like she will go on plots, her and her sister will sneak onto little farmers' plots and take things like asparagus and potatoes. And then she becomes a bit of a saint potato too. She starts handing out potatoes and, but she, my mother's like an agricultural terrorist essentially.
But whose plots are these that she's sneaking
just,
onto in the
first
place?
She goes on her walks. She just goes on these walks with her sister who is also acts like a 7-year-old.
Right, but it sounds like they're casing places. That's what it sounds like.
They're definitely casing. They're definitely, absolutely.
They're not walks. They're like, they're a crime gang of sorts. They're a family crime gang.
They're exactly. They're sizing up. They're sizing up heists.
Right.
And that without question, it has now turned into specific trips for the produce.
And do you get the impression that they like? I mean, do they have like balaclavas? Are they, you know, sneaking in disguise, or is it this just a matter of sort of like we're two older ladies? Nobody's going to suspect that we're like, you know, going to come into your plot and steal your carrots.
I think it's kind of that. I think it's partially like, well, so yeah, I think, I think they're careful. Like if they see people picking, they'll like, they won't do it. But then she told me the other day that there was another woman there doing it too. And so they were all kind of playing this standoff game where they were all pretending that they weren't going to sneak on there and steal. And then eventually had a conversation and realized they were all on the same page. And then they all went in for the heist.
Yeah, sorry, we're waiting for you to leave so that we can go in and steal. Oh, yeah. That is such a relief because I was actually waiting here for you guys to leave so I can go and steal. So like we could all just go in there and steal right now.
Great, great. And then they were just like embarrassing each other with how much they were like, oh, this it's like two drunks like being like, oh, this person likes the party. They were like, oh, they're just taking. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
Small town England theft.
We have a lot of local like farmers' stalls on the road. So in the area that I live, there is a lot of like properties that are, you know, farms of some kind. They might have like, you know, a range of vegetables and fruits, but they might like there's a lot of avocado places. Sure. Like macadamias are very big in this area. And so it's not unusual out the front of these farms that you have this little honesty stall where like people will lay out like their vegetables or them, you know, whatever it is. They've got a mandarin tree that, you know, is like, you know, suddenly full of fruit and they've got like, you know, mandarins and you just like leave your money in this honesty box and you go and like pick up all what these individual farmers are. So like if you could go for a drive for like 10 kilometers, you could essentially drive past enough places where you're like, oh, there's some eggs. There's like all the ingredients I need basically to make something
eggs,
in these stores.
Oranges, avocados, we got it.
But it's honesty system, right? So if I were your mother, then I could just like go along and I could just like take those things and I could not put my $5 in the honesty box.
Well, no. It's just so funny to hear the shadow that's now cast upon my mother. Like, but I think that she would respect the honesty box system.
Right.
I think she has found like.
But
she
because
says,
there is no honesty box, she doesn't
yes,
think.
Yes, because it's
that, so honesty
yes.
goes out the window. If they haven't
yes,
brought honesty to the
no,
table, then
no
they don't
rules.
Deserve honesty.
No rules have been set yet, so I think she feels like, you know, she's like, she's just like an explorer, sort of, to herself. And, I think she would respect the honesty box, but maybe not. Maybe if she gotten used to it. She just likes free things. She definitely wouldn't be comfortable stealing, but she has told me that, like, when she's been at the electronic checkout, like, someone came over and thought she was buying something cheaper than what she was buying and she didn't tell them. Like, it's like that level of crime. But that level of crime, she's Al Capone.
Yeah, and what I'm... Yeah, all I would say is, you know, if she were a teenager, that would be identifying behavior they would establish as a pattern. No. They'd be like, we've got to keep our eye on this. Sure, it's petty crime at the moment. maybe it feels like, oh, well, it's just like some celery and, you know, a couple of parsnips. Who's that going to hurt? But, you know, then she moves up to bigger vegetables initially, like, you know, maybe
she's
a pumpkin.
Then a tractor. Know. Next thing you know, she's taking a tractor.
That's right, yeah.
She's driving down the M5, just on a tractor. You'll have to take me dead, Jesus Christ.
There was no honesty box. I would have respected the honesty box.
You didn't
but...
tell me I'd be in trouble. As she's just throwing potatoes at oncoming police cars. You stop it. No. Come and get me, piggy.
I was... what was I watching? I was watching something the other night where they were saying that actually there was a case at sea where potatoes had been used to win a battle. And I don't know all the details of this, but essentially the boat had run out of grenades, but the opposition didn't know that the boat had run out of grenades.
In the Irish hell, this cannot be. This is like the Irish like battle, like, and then we understood we had to dig deep and use the only thing we had left.
I wish I knew any of the details about this story to actually bring, you know, it properly to the table. But the gist of it that I'm going to give you is that there was one side and they're in a battle at sea and they've run out of grenades, but they need time to be able to reload their weapons in order to fire on the like the other boat, right? And so to fool the other boat, they all ran out onto the deck with potatoes and threw potatoes at them. And that just gave them enough time to like reload their cannons or whatever and sink the other boat. And so it was whoever was like, you know what? I don't know if is that, do you think at all times they would have a bucket of potatoes ready for that situation? Or is that just somebody in that moment, MacGyver style, thinking on their feet and going, you know what? We are out of grenades, but I was down in the galley.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could see a case being made for both, but I would like to believe that it was just some guy threaded the needle in a moment when everyone was like, they've got all the grenades, there's nothing we could do. Like, is it there? Or is there maybe something we can finally do? What are you talking about, Paddy? You know exactly what I'm talking about. You kept me down on the poop deck peeling potatoes the whole time. But the whole time I've been thinking of a plan. We need to potato bomb them. And then one of them's like, I mean, I guess it would give us enough time if we... if everyone takes one, we'll have time. We're wasting our lives down here right now discussing it. All right, Paddy's right. Get the bucket.
He opens up the cooler and in there he's actually carved all the potatoes into the shape of grenades. He's been planning this for weeks.
Jesus, Paddy, how did you know this? I just had a feeling sometime we'd need them. And worst case scenario, they Julianne very easily. And then the other boat. The other boat. Who's in charge? Who's training? Who's training them? Anything is a grenade. For the record. Literally, anything handheld can be a bomb.
I mean,
bomb,
I guess
probably
you've got to
is.
Err on the side. If you're tossing up between whether it's a potato and a grenade, you've got to err on the side of it's a grenade because you don't want to make that mistake the other way around.
No, no, for sure. Yeah, no, yeah. There's no coming back from the other one. However, an egregious error in war, though. It takes a while to, like, to how long? Boy, were those all duds?
Well, you're right, right? Because if you believe in the first place they're grenades, then they don't explode. There's got to be that moment on the other side of the boat where they're just like, so...
Probably buys you 10 or 15 seconds more.
Right.
Do you think they all hit the water? What? You know?
Is that...
What do you think?
I mean, they couldn't have thrown, like, potatoes or something.
Well, I know, I understand that, but there's four potatoes right here, so... And they're actually... I mean, they're grenade-shaped, which I find weird. And the pins are gone. You can tell there's a hole for the pin, and the pins are... So did they pull the little... circular pin? Not sure how to... No! Reload! Oh, son of a bitch. It's an Irish guy. Oh, very odd brand, isn't it? Oh, my lord. And then that night, they're all eating baked grenades.
Oh, man.
I think you missed my last joke, which wasn't good, so that's good. That's safe.
Hey, so are you going back out and doing stand-up? I've seen you post some dates. Have you done any of them yet?
Yeah, I've done a bunch of them. I mean, there's more coming, but Yeah, I mean, I've probably done, I guess, probably three or four weekends, and then one show, a one-nighter in Hawaii. So yeah, I've done a shitload. I mean, since, like, you know, since things here were starting to normalize and things, you know, there was, once I was vaccinated, I mean, you start to feel more and more comfortable, and it's still super weird. It's super weird. But a couple of the clubs have been at full capacity, so you are dealing with, like, regular clubs. I mean, the people have to wear masks, like, I think on their way out, but I think that's even stopped, you know, in the past couple weeks. So it's both so strange, but then it's also just so great. It's like just so, you know how it is where you start to, like, you know, you grinding it out. When you're grinding, like, when you're grinding new, like, material out, like, you are, you know, you are working. So it is, but, and you have those nights where you're just like, oh my God, I'm too tired or whatever. Like, I've had none of those. And even if I do have them, they're just flashes and I'm just, like, down to, you know, get right out there. So it's been fun.
Yeah, I had a couple of times, you know, getting back into it where eventually the novelty of the audience wore off. Do you know what I mean? In like, you know, they'd been back enough and going to enough shows that there wasn't that, oh my God, we haven't got to do this for so long. Yeah. Like, you know, we're back doing it that had been there initially. And I got to one of those nights where in the past, I definitely would have been like, ah, oh, shit, you know, like this is that night, you know, where it is going to be a chore and it's just nothing's going to really work how I want it to work. And they're just not, well, regardless of what I do, they're not really going to be into it. And my literal mindset in that moment was, eh, fine, I'm having quite a good time doing this. Like, you know, as in, like, I was literally going, I'm having a fine time telling this story. They can like it or not like it.
Yeah.
And of course, as soon as I made that decision, of course, they did engage with it more. Yeah. But it was almost like I had to go, oh, I'm going to do this anyway. Like, you can't put me off. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, that's why you're doing tons of inside jokes. Like, who is this guy? Yeah. But no, I definitely think that, like, that the truth is about that sensation too, is that decision sometimes to be like, I'm going to enjoy it. They might already be enjoying it. It's just there are some times where people are not that active or vote, whatever. And absolutely. I mean, there's so many times where, like, at a show,
probably most of the time is the actual truth to that.
Yeah. I'll have shows and I'll be like to the person up front and they'll be like, this guy has not laughed the whole show. And then after the show, he'll be like, oh man, I'm such a fan. And you're just like, oh, well, you were in the front row, like looking like you were a bouncer on a break, just so you know.
Yeah. Just so you know, you gave me a little feedback. Here's some feedback for you. Just your face. It's a second row face is all I'm saying, man. Like, just wherever the lights go down, you'll be able to see it. Walk into the club where you feel the lights go down on you. Just sit in whatever row that is.
You're so used to dating apps that you just take the person's face and just move it away. You're just like swiping. Human swipe. I had a guy who was in the front row. And he just sat there stone-faced for, you know, the whole show. And so I go, I'm like, I said to him at some point, like, you know, have you laughed at any point during this tonight? And he was like, whatever. I did like a little bit with him. And then after the show, he came up to me and he goes, that's what I do. I sit in the front row and I don't laugh to, like, for the comedians. And I was like, oh. And it was me and another comic. And we were just like, okay, what a fucking, like, you realize that you're not in great, like, no comedian is like, oh, cool. Like, everyone hates what you just said, who's a comedian. But he was wearing, like, a badge of honor. He was like, it's a cool bit I have, like, to ruin you slowly. You're like, oh, great, good. Please don't come to any more things.
It's, that's a weird flex. That is definitely one of those things where you're like, man, this is not, well, A, even if this is your bit, this is not your complete misunderstanding of the idea that you share it with the comedians.
Yeah.
As if they will think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
That's where the real, like, I can understand somebody going, you know what gets me off? Like, I hate stand-up comedy so much that I am going to go to a stand-up comedy club. I mean, you know, I can imagine that. There's a mindset there going, you know what I like to do for fun? I like to go and just stare at a comedian and make them reevaluate every decision they've ever in. Like, it's a good night out for me. I get all of my stress about the world, and it all just comes out in seeing if this person can handle it or not. Occasionally, they'll get in a bit with me, and that's my outlet. That's my window into show business. But the idea that at the end of that, you would go up to the comedian and go, "How good was that bit we did together?" is like, no.
I was like, you're sort of relieved, but you're also like, sir, have you ever talked to anybody? Like, have you ever had a conversation? Like, this is so antithetical to anything about performance. But he's like, I did it to Kevin Hart, to Carlos Mencia. He was like, both of them were like, "What's wrong with you?" And I was just like, "Nothing. I don't know. It's just not funny." I'm like, All right, great. That's really a terrible. That's a war.
Well, also, because often you're skilled enough to be able to deal with that. It's like a heckler, right? Like, normally you're skilled enough as a performer these days that you can make that moment into something special.
Yeah.
And but that then gives them an inflated sense of their role in that. Like, they walk away going, "That was the best bit of the show. Like, it was great that I yelled out." And you're like, "Well, show was going fine without you."
Yeah.
Like, the fact that I handled it well, like, should not be an endorsement of your behavior in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like a random dude showing up on a roof where there's a sniper and taking a shot and like hitting the person or just doing some chaos. And you're like, yes, technically you've.
No, I think it's even like more. I think it's someone slips on a banana peel, falls off a bridge, and you save them. Yeah. And he expects to also get a medal. Like, no, dude. Like, one of us dived off the bridge and gave the other CPR. We don't.
Well, we both got to land at the same time.
Yeah. Well, it's like him expecting that he gets the medal 6 months of the year. So I get a medal for that, like, for my heroic behavior. He's like, but I get that medal for 6 months because, like, without me, you couldn't have had that moment.
Hell of a team. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It honestly threw me. It threw me very hard. Are you doing shows? How often are you performing? How often is performing happening?
I'm living a bit out of town, and I haven't been. I've done some bits and pieces. I did a couple of festivals, and I've done some shows, and it's been a bit random still because I'm really thinking about what I want to. So 2022 will be my first like proper brand new, you know, show since 2019, and that's the first time in 25 years that I haven't written like a show every single year, right?
Yeah.
And
it took a global pandemic for you to not do one.
But the weird thing about that, of course, is you now feel like there's extra pressure, not even pressure, just from me probably more than anything, to go, well, when I do come back with a brand new show, I want it to be really good and about something. And that was kind of what I was going to ask you, which was, do you feel like you've changed as a comedian? Like, is your act different? Is like, do you think that you're talking about different things in a different way, like, than you were pre-pandemic?
Well, for sure. I think that there is, I've been doing a lot of crowd work, and, you know, like, that's helpful for, like, you know, just to put up these fucking clips and things like that. So I've been doing a shitload of crowd work, like, you know, and that is just fun. Like, that just makes everything more fun. I think people have more fun the more you do that. But then I also think that in conjunction with the fact that the, you know, I was doing the weird Gareth show from my apartment every week. So I was doing this weird like riffing show to nobody. So then to get an audience, I mean, there's just extra juice in that in general. But I also think because I'd recorded my album and that was my first album, that all the stuff I'm doing now is like kind of newer stuff. And I like the pacing of it so much more than the things I'd been doing for a long time before it. So there's a few things going on. But yes, I feel like there is just, you know, I feel like I don't know. I feel like it's slowed down a little bit.
This conversation will be weeks apart for people when they hear it, but I've just had it with Dave this morning, so it's top of mind for me. I am fascinated by, so the example I use with Dave is, I tell people, if you want to see what I, a professional stand-up comedian who's been writing shows for a quarter of a century, thinks my show is, you have to come on the first night. Because the first night is the only night that you get to see what I thought the show was going to be. Because after that, I get the feedback from the audience and it changes. you know, things get dropped out, things get expanded, things get changed in different directions. Sometimes it changes 5%, sometimes it changes 50%. You know, like, it is a collaborative process from then on. But we had like a year and a half by ourselves, like developing what our ideas were and what our comedic perspective was. Like you said, you're doing these Gareth shows, but you're really just doing it for you. Even though the audience is there, you're not responding to, oh, they liked that particular bit of it more than they liked that particular bit. So ordinarily when you're riffing, that's what you're writing, that momentum. I mean, even on the dollop, you're writing like what Dave's reaction to where you're going is. And then suddenly you're not being shaped by Dave's reaction. You're not being shaped by an audience's reaction. You're only being shaped by where your own brain will go. Do you think, like, and that's been the same for most comedians. I think that I'm just fascinated to see where comedians went without constantly asking the audience where they should be going.
That's so true. I mean, it really is like it, you know, I guess you do have an I do have a bit of an extra confidence because I feel like I can at least keep talking. Like, there's one thing I know, I can keep talking. And so it is, you're totally right in the sense that like the audience feedback, your shit just changes so often. I mean, you're pulling out jokes and then you're like fixing jokes and then you're putting them back in and then you're so much happier with them. And then, you know, and it's constantly that process. But yeah, I don't know. I think that I still, at least for the first month or so, was benefiting from what you were talking about with like audience enthusiasm. I think I was really doing well, but I also think crowds are just like, holy fuck. Like, it's so nice to, you know, I mean, some places I went, they never shut down, but some of the other places, you know, people were like so into it and so happy and excited and grateful. Like when I was in Hawaii, like they were just so, you know, everyone was just so thankful, you know, which is, you know, how that's what a great audience, you know? But yeah, it's maybe hard to calculate exactly how it has changed. I even did a couple stand-up shows just to paying audiences that I couldn't see, you know? And like the second one I did of that was a lot of like new material. So the idea of performing unrehearsed material for people who were like fans is just really strange and not great, you know, not like you're like, and then that could get better, you know. But I had a bunch of that gave me so much material to work with when I started going back out, because some of it was good, some pieces, moments.
Did you like from particularly doing what you did? Because like Rocky Montage style, you've done something really ideal, which is you've spent the time in lockdown like getting fit. Like you did something that no, like it's essentially the, you know, the ice bath version of comedy, which is like doing improvised comedy to no audience. Like it's stripped back to basics, expose your worst nightmare. Like there's no one there and you just have to keep talking. Like, and then to add back in all those other elements, it seems like, you know, yeah, it's, do you feel like fitter, like match fit? Do you feel like you're not rusty in the way that some people probably came back rusty?
I will say I did not feel rusty. I felt energized and amped up by it and was way in. So no, I think from, and I had pretty much, because when I, right before the pandemic, I was doing stand up in Australia, and that tour was so helpful because it just, you know, I just was doing a show every night basically and was able to just craft it. And I just, by the time I came back, I had like a half hour. And so I just recorded my album. And then to be able to like, you know, come up with other stuff really just gave me a chance to like, I mean, I just turned the screws on things and just was, I was ready to go. I mean, I was amped up to do new material and, you know, I mean, it felt fucking good.
Yeah, I'm gonna, I want to lay to bed the rusty myth. There is this such a myth in comedy, which is that you constantly have to be working. And I want to like make a case for, and this is at someone who has sometimes fallen into the trap of constantly being working. I want to make a real case for stepping away from it and thinking about it and reevaluating it and constantly not being on the treadmill of it and then stepping back into the treadmill. I think that sometimes the worst excesses and mistakes of our industry are because there is just this constant forward momentum and people don't take an opportunity to step back and just evaluate where shit's at and why you're doing shit and appreciate doing shows and, you know, don't start hating the thing that you're meant to love.
It really is true. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, there. I think, unfortunately, as like a species, we've really not learned very much from the pandemic. But there are definitely things career-wise, I feel like, exactly. I feel like appreciating, and I even appreciated what I got to do before the pandemic, as I know you did. But, you know, you are, to some extent, there are times where you are at work. And so it is. It is what it is. That, to me, is at minimum going to be – it's like when you go through some terrible shit and then you go through some shit. You're like, I hate the shit, but at least it's not the terrible shit. I feel like I'm always going to have the perspective, or at least for a long time, the perspective of, again, how just fucking great it is and how, you know, important it is to be like – working at it so that people are coming to see a good product.
Right. You know? So, okay. So what are you interested in talking about then? Like, what is it you've been talking about when you've been, I don't mean like, what are the bits, but I mean, what are the themes? What are the topics? What, like, are you talking about, you know, the pandemic? Are you talking, are you ignoring the pandemic? Like how much are you addressing it in your material?
I have probably the first 10 minutes is about the vaccine and the pandemic is probably the first 10 minutes, but I really like it. And some of it is not, you know, straight up about like thoughts on it. Some are, but then some of it is like this one story about my aunt who like, you know, is like going out there and doing all these things. And she would just, whenever she'd tell you, she'd just say, you know, socially distanced, of course, like to make you feel like it was fine, you know, but you'd be like, no, these are like things you're not supposed to be doing. But that was that caveat at the end. But stuff like that, and that's probably about 10 minutes. And then, you know, a lot of it is about my existence as half English and half American. Like, there's a lot of other stuff, but that is really, like, there's a core, like, 15 or 20 minutes that is all little branched, you know, moments off of that, you know, just oddities and, you know, weird family stories.
What's your perspective on, I was having a conversation with somebody about this because you've got a unique perspective on this, because I was trying to work out how you feel if you're British, because within your lifetime, like, you used to kind of rule the world, right? You were the predominant sort of culture in the world. You were like the, you know, this great British empire.
The sun never set on the grid. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And obviously, as we understand through modernize, a lot of that was terrible colonization and stuff. So not only have you lost all that accumulated power, you've almost in some ways become an irrelevancy in so many ways, like from what you were.
Yeah. Like, it's like a steroided athlete.
Right. Yeah. Just a mockery of once what you once were, but also having to pay for like people going, well, you were terrible in here and here and here, and like having to reconcile with past bad deeds. Then also you're living in America when this like
it's
like,
me, it might be me.
Like, well, it's just a couple of, you've had front row seats to a couple of fallen empires is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's, look, I mean, it's definitely something to do with me. No, I mean, it's what happens. Eventually, it's like gambling. Like, if you've ever played blackjack and been up like $600, you're not yourself. And then when you're down $300, you're nice and you need help and you need people to step up. You know, like, America has been up at the table for so long that we don't know what it's like to break even. So we'll keep going to the fucking ATM until we're back up. And if we're never back up, it ends badly. I mean, it, and yeah, I mean, yes, England, even England today, it's like, when I posit to my mother, why is there a monarchy? There's no answer. It's like, there's no answer. There's no actual answer. They say tourism, but tourism. If you like take that off the, if you take that off the table, there's just no, I mean, it's crazy. It's totally
also,
crazy.
What I, like, again, anachronistic thing that, like, you once ruled the world and now people will only visit your country because you've still got a queen.
It's like Trump the family. Like, it's like you used to be like, you used to have like some, you know, fight in the game. And now, yeah, people just show up to like look at you because you're like kind of a little bit of a train wreck at this point.
Right. It's ceremonial. You know? And yeah, absolutely. But people are obsessed with it. Like, that is the royal family. I mean, it does like generate so much press and so much like interest, and people have incredibly strong opinions about. I don't know what it says about us as human beings that. Like, you know, you could be someone who lives in a completely different country. Although, to be fair, you know, it's the Queen of Australia still, of course, Elizabeth, the Queen of Australia, because we are, again, a Commonwealth country and not a republic. We can't stand on our own 2 feet. You're, so I am mocking Britain and America a little bit, but I should point out for the fucking record, she's also our queen. That ceremonial family that they have in Britain for tourism. We don't even get tourism out of it.
No, do they even go there? I feel like, when was the last time one of them was there?
They come by every now and again, like solo, right. One of them, not all at once.
Right, right, yeah. One of them will just show up for a little while away. It's lovely to see you. Gosh, really nailing it. Lovely, well, absolute, love pie face.
Back in the old days, essentially, I mean, I watched The Crown in lockdown, and if that is to be believed, then essentially in the old days, it was like, would you like to go? And like the queen would be like, Phil, you're just, I know you've got to like, you know, sow your wild oats. So why can't you sail to the other side of the world and go on tour around Australia for 3 months and root whoever you want to root and then come back? I'm busy. I've got some horse shit to deal with. Like, I'm the queen. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Like, just like that, that seems to be the implication of what Australia was and what royal visits were.
The fuck tour.
Yeah.
Wow. Australia. England's glory hole, essentially.
Yeah, it's like basically we keep them in the Commonwealth so that we can send out like the men of the royal family down under to get a little down under.
Oh, God. You know what? Do you remember when we did the show where I found out what rooting meant?
Oh, yes.
That's if you and I were to have like a countdown of our top five moments, that would be in it.
I mean, it's such a
we'll have some
uniquely Australian term.
Oh, but it was like scripted. It felt it was like I was like, I'm rooting penguins in this one. And you right there. Right there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like a quick mind wasted on such trivialities.
No.
what a disciplined person might have done with a mind that sharp.
No, well, that was that you're, yeah. I mean, we're similar in that way where it's like sometimes there are, you have so many options for jokes that you almost wish it was like, it's too hard because there's two, it's the Three Stooges going through a doorway.
Yeah, I would love to. It would be a very niche podcast, and I'm sure that not very many people at all would enjoy it, but I would enjoy doing it, which was a podcast just called Here's All My Thoughts About This Thing. Because whatever the thing is, I guarantee you, whatever thoughts I have to share on it, I've got a dozen other thoughts on it. My brain, while I'm telling you the thought that I have, my brain is also working on three other thoughts on the topic that it just wants to throw into the fucking mix. Like, and there is no rational outlet. There is no place that I can just get all those thoughts out.
Well, when you do your improvised shows, are you not like...
Well, that's as close. That's kind of as close to that as...
Are you of two minds? Because that's one of the things, like, the more you do stand-up, you start to realize is that, like, there's material that you're familiar with enough, your brain can also be thinking other things at the same time. It's really weird. But I would imagine that is difficult when... Or even when I was doing the Gareth's thing, like there's times where you kind of can split it, but it must be so hard in front of like an actual audience.
No, like, I've given up on it like in that regard. Like I actually just need to be 100% in it. Never second guess like a decision that I've made unless I'm second guessing it for the sake of a comedic device, right? Like sometimes I'm getting my way out of something by acknowledging that it didn't go well, and then the joy is in me digging my way out of that hole, right? We've embarked on that. You know, in a minute, I'm going to turn it back on you guys and pretend it was your fault that it didn't work.
I trust the process.
Yeah. You know what the next 3 minutes is after that joke you didn't laugh at? Me explaining to you why you should have laughed at that joke. Yeah. And I am not going to let the defense mount a case. This is purely from one perspective.
Yeah. No, it's like how a mountain climber, like, has to find a grip to keep. Like, there's like, you're like, I'm going to find a grip.
Yeah.
Could be 40 seconds, could be 40 minutes. There will be another grip.
Yeah, and sometimes that's a good analogy in that, like, sometimes it's just on your way to somewhere else. Like, the worst thing you can do is look for the best option. Just take, is there an option there? Just take that option that is in front of you and follow that thought. And to be honest, that's where I love it the most. The moments where if you stopped me in the show and said, how did you get here? Because it has literally just been 8 steps of, like, you know, word association, like one thought's led to another thought. And now the bit that I'm in, you know, this whole scene that I've kind of constructed in this room, like, you could never get back there. There's no way you could ever replicate it as material because you needed the other 7 random steps on the way for the entire story to make sense. In those moments, you're like, that you just have to be in it. I mean, you understand this. Like, you know, you kind of just have to be there and see what happens. I used to have this hard and fast rule where I would not repeat anything. So if I told a story, if I got into a story on one night, like, then that story was out of bounds, like, for doing if I was doing a show the next night, or if I was doing a show, like, you know, in a different place at a different time. And what I found was that that actually became unnecessarily complicated. So instead, because if you naturally get to a place, it feels really weird then to go, well, I'm not going to tell this perfect story for this moment, because, and your brain won't improvise in that scenario, because basically what I'm doing in these shows is, like, free associating. And when you don't have a bit on anything, this is why prepared material doesn't really work in the shows, like, it wouldn't work in the shows, because if you're trying to get towards a bit, your brain works in a different way to where you're just going, no, I'm in this bit and I'm following it, and anywhere I go is potentially new material. The minute you have a bit, your brain just goes, well, this is the bit. You should just talk about this thing that we already thought of the other day. Like, you don't need me right now. Like, I'm just going to have a break because you've been riding me pretty hard for the last 40 minutes. You just roll through that story you told the other night, and then I'll get you the fucking end of it, right? Yeah. I know how it ends. I was there the other night. Yeah. It's a good story. This is perfect for this moment, and you can just roll back in. Just give me a breather. Just let me sit on the bench for a minute, coach. You know, give me a Gatorade. So now what I do instead is I allow myself to tell the same story if it gets there, but never tell it in the way you told it last time. So I go into it and I just go, I'm going to make this story about, I'm going to pick another bit of it and concentrate on that rather than, you know, what I concentrated on last time.
Yeah. No, it is. I think that's I think that's true with actual, like, scripted stand-up, too, in a way. I mean, there's stuff where you do stick to what your plan is for sure. But then there's also, if you have the openness to, like, let things breathe and and again, you follow. I mean, it's like, you know, when we do dollop shows, like, you and I are experiencing this thing in real time with other people. So you get the most amount of same-pagedness, which is a term, medically speaking, as the audience. And so you are all, so it helps you as someone who's trying to come up with jokes. You know, there's this group mind going on where you're just labeling it in whatever comedic way you can, but they're like, you know, but yeah, I mean, that's like stand up in ways too. But yeah, that with the dollop, I mean, obviously it's peak like setup.
But that's true, because everyone in the room is following the story, and everybody in the room, just by the nature of that, has their brains engaged in a way where they're kind of seeing where they, even if they're not acknowledging it, they're kind of, their brain is doing a bit of, this is where I would go, or what is the story, where is the story going, where is it going to go? And when you're on stage, it's just a constant series of guesses of going, is this what we all think is funny based on the information we have so far?
Yeah.
It's not, You don't have the luxury of going, here's something I'm introducing as an idea and I'll tell you why it's funny. Like, everyone is up to date on the story and you've got to go, am I guessing the...
Yep.
I'm concentrating on the hat. Are
I'm
you
worried
all
about the hands.
Is interested
I'm
in
actually,
the hat?
Your hat thing didn't work, but I'm going to focus on the hands if I may actually take a swing at this myself. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then... Yeah.
Oh, it's the name.
Of course.
Oh, you all think he's naming?
Well,
oh,
that happens
course.
Where
Sorry.
I'll miss a key detail because I'll be like, okay, and then that guy could be, and David be like, I thought you would think that's crazy. And I'm like, yeah, well, it's a crazy fish. Yeah, that fish has a crazy name. Of course that fish has a crazy name. I'm sorry. Hold on. Yeah. All right. And that fish's name is crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
For the last 15 seconds, I've been trying to find a rhyme with Himmelberg. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I got distracted on that.
I had a whole Flintstones bit, but I couldn't remember Barney's name. Sorry. What's going on? We're up to date. Well, that's also why, like, you know, I go back and forth with performance and pot. Like, you know, there were times when I would be like, oh, when you first start, you're like, I can't be high that day. And then you're like, actually, I really like getting high. And then you're like, I'm getting high too much. And then you're like, well, I guess, and I hadn't gotten high before shows in a while. And then recently, every now and then, we'll get a little stoned a little before a show just to see. But with Dollops, I used to be like, I need to be a little high. And then I was like, no, I don't think this is the right format because you have to focus on a story. And then the only time that I really will get high before a Dollop show is with you, because I'm like, well, you and I, it's like, we're a team. Like, we've got like the take, you know, like that's what I'm like, yes. And there is something to that too. There's some joy in that too. It's nice and loose and like, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. It's they're fun memories, and I hope that we get to do all that again in Australia. Fingers crossed. I mean, we'll probably on our current rate be at about 6 or 7% vaccinated population.
It's a lot.
So that's what they need for herd immunity, isn't it?
8%. They say 8% is herd. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys are right there, but your prime minister turned down the vaccine, didn't he?
No, well, yes, he didn't buy Pfizer, I think, is the one that he didn't buy. He was like, you know what, we can
Which
save a bit of money.
Like such an Australian company. Pfizer. It's perfect. Sorry, I cut you off.
Well, I think the problem was that, my theory on this is that in Australia, because COVID didn't affect our society in the way that it did a lot of other places, Melbourne, possible exception. I think people shopped around. They were just like, here the AstraZeneca's killed a few people. I'm going to wait for the Pfizer.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm thinking about a Moderna. I just feel a bit like I'm a Moderna guy. And you're just like, oh my God. Like a year and a half ago, like a deadly pandemic disease shut down the world. And through the miracle of science, we have managed to fucking nail like a range of fucking vaccines against this thing. And you're just like, I think I'm a Moderna guy, you know? I'm a Gemini and a Moderna guy.
Or there was a lot of that here, too. There was a lot of, I mean, I even had that for a minute. I was a Moderna guy, if we're being honest. So this really cuts deep. I was a Moderna guy for a minute. I'd heard good things, but like a know-nothing. Just like a know-nothing, just like, I like Moderna. I had brand loyalty to a vaccine at first, and then ended up getting Pfizer. And then I was like, I'm so happy with my choice.
But also, in any other vaccine you've ever taken in the rest of your life, have you ever compared?
I'm shopping for some other measles options right now. I'm not exactly. No, I'll wait. It sounds a little cumbersome, to be honest.
In every other circumstance, we're just happy to go in and go, whatever the house. Whatever.
Completely. I'll just have the balsamic. Yeah. But no, now we're like, I'm on a diet and I don't do vaccines on Thursday. I like that is a hard and fast rule of mine. So can't. Yeah. But now,
There is something. There is something about humanity that I can't but imagine will be part of our downfall, which is that we are incredibly brilliant and then so immediately blasé about our brilliance. Like we come to all that happens is our expectations get raised. Like that is the story of this century, without a fucking doubt, is the expectations we have for our lives compared to what our ancestors had for their lives is so just our incredibly problems, disproportionate.
Our problems, like our, I mean, I honestly, like any time a friend of mine is telling me, unless it's about a family member, it's a problem where you're like, this is not, this to 150 years ago, imagine someone telling someone this is, like, I can't find a place to get my hair cut. It's like, that is not, these are not problems. That's what I was saying before about, like, you got to go through really tough shit so then you recognize, like, you know, when there's just dumb things going on that you should not be frustrated by. But
I mean, even that idea of like 50, 60 years ago, like it doesn't, you don't have to go back that far, right? Where you're just like, if you said to somebody, I said, there's going to be this period of time where we're not going to be able to leave our houses for 18 months. And they're just like, well, that sounds pretty bad. Like, and I guess you're just trapped there with like, you know, some board games and, you know, maybe a couple of old records, puzzles, you know, something like that to, I imagine. Yeah, I imagine you'll eventually get pretty sick of that. And then you'll be like, oh, no. I'll have access to every movie and every song that's ever been made by any artist in all of history. I'll be able to just stream those into my house. That'll be fine.
Movies. Anytime I want a movie, I watch a movie.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you're like, you know, single and alone, you might have to find like, you know, an underwear catalog where like there's a picture of a woman in a brassiere that you can actually, I'll be able to see everybody on the planet fucking. Like,
have you heard of the Oculus? I have a machine that sucks my dick, sir.
Yeah, okay. But surely these like videos of all these people like having sex must cost you millions of dollars. Oh, no, for free on the internet. Nah. Again, the same thing that provides me all the music and the, like, we've never been.
I could never watch all of it. What?
And we're so spoiled. Like, we're so spoiled. Like, we take all of it for granted. We complain constantly that there is nothing to watch when there's never been a time in history where we've had more access to everything.
No, it is. It is a total joke. I think you're right. I think it does, to bottom line the positivity, I think it just does undercut why we're so fucked. I also think that in conjunction with constantly watching things where the earth is fucked and someone comes along and just saves it all has been very desensitizing in a world that's falling apart. I totally have heard people say things like someone will invent the thing that'll figure it out. And you're just like, no, this is not the fucking Avenger. Like, that's not how this works. This is like, we need to do the slow play. We need to do the painful plan. The one where we make sacrifices instead of being like, don't worry, he's got a hammer.
Well, I'm sure that it's a complete coincidence that the very people who need the narrative out there that a single individual can come along and save everything so that the people who are actually in charge and have the finances and the resources to do something don't actually have to do something about it. Like, the actual people who have power don't have to use any of those power. I'm sure it is a complete coincidence that the people who have all that power also are the people who fund movie studios and have been the people behind the predominant narrative that there will be somebody who comes along and saves it all. I'm sure that is all just a complete and utter coincidence.
Well, the idea, like, and I mean, it's a crazy thing for someone involved in entertainment to be like, what the, like, stop working for fucking Amazon. Like, they, you know, when you see, like, Chris Pratt in an Amazon show, it's like Superman being in a Lex Luthor production. It's just like, you should not be working for that fucking dude.
And then at the same time, it's like, well, who do you fucking work for? Because, like, no one's any good. We let everyone become terrible, and now there's no good choices.
We've gone through that with our show and traveling a lot, where we're like, you know, we don't want to be flying a lot, but also by the same time, like, there's just these changes need to be made on such a global level.
Right.
That you're like, look, like, I recycle, like, militantly, but my friends make fun of me because it is true. It is, like, you know, it's helping me. It's what I can do, but I have no fucking power, you know.
I think what you're, in summary, I think what you're saying, Gareth, is, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yes. Thank you, Will. Thank you. Yep. That is exactly... So concisely said. You should write that down. Gosh, that's good.
As I and only I have ever said, don't hate the player, hate the game.
I thought it was maybe from one of those Wiggle raps about, it sound, you know.
Well, we didn't even get to the third verse, which was all about mashed banana, but I bet you
mashed
can guess.
Mashed banana? Why? What is it, for a baby? Is that a dish there?
Mashed banana? You can babies mashed banana, don't you?
Well, but I mean, you're not eating it, right? Like, it's not like a grown-up thing there,
I mean,
is it?
Old people, maybe? Like, when you taste.
Yeah, but you're not, you haven't had a mashed banana. You haven't had a mashed banana in like a, you know, 20 years-ish, right?
I mean, no one's lining up to mash my banana for me, no.
we'll be right back.
I drive past a place called the Big Banana, which uh-huh. is, so in between where I live in Sydney, when I drive that way, I drive past a tourist attraction in Australia in Coffs Harbour called the Big Banana.
Sure.
The thing about the Big Banana, not as big as you would expect it would be from the name Big Banana. That's what I would say. It's certainly very big for a banana. Absolutely Godzilla kaiju size for an actual banana. But for when you promise people the Big Banana, I feel like always when I drive by it, I'm like, that banana is not quite big enough.
It should not be that easy to make a tourist attraction by just building a big thing. I think in Australia, I found this picture the other day. I just took of an enormous shrimp, which is an oxymoron.
I think you'd be talking about the giant shrimp at Ballina. Australia loves a big thing. Like, there are big things all over Australia. All these like country towns have just like some like big, like. Yeah, and it's often just like a fruit or a submarine, but they're like really random. It's kind of like Monopoly tokens, where you're like, what's the theme here? Like, I've never understood the theme. Like, there's a
affluence,
hat,
but there's a dog. Like,
right, it just is all over the place. And it's the same with big things in Australia. Yeah. It's just like
a
sometimes
thimble.
You're like,
wasn't there a thimble?
You're like, yeah, a big thimble. There's
Why
like a there's a giant sheep, a giant like merino in Goulburn.
Yeah.
That one is big. There's a gift shop in it. Like, I think you climb up into it, and there used to be a gift shop in there.
Right. It's quite a game.
There was smaller Uluru, like Ayers Rock, as they used to call it before, like it readopted the traditional owner's name, but Uluru. Yeah, there used to be like a smaller Ayers Rock, like for people who thought that Ayers Rock was a bit too big.
What? So just like a rock? People are like, this is my size.
It was made out of paper mache. It still exists, I believe. And it's
what
like...
What's the budget on these projects? $50?
Like, I'm going to say 500 max.
Yeah, it's like, like, I mean, honestly, get a big shrimp and then that's your business model. Well, mate, it all clicked for us once we started construction on the big shrimp. Bloody hell, was that a great decision.
I mean, there is something in... Like, I can understand the idea if you're, like, driving through a place. Oh, isn't that quirky and quaint? I went past that giant shrimp. But if you live in Giant Shrimp Town, where the main thing that your town is known for is the fact that you live in the shadow of this giant shrimp, that is a particular existence, particularly if you're the people behind the decision, that you're just like, you're driving past the giant Ned Kelly at Glen Rowan one day, and you're just like, you know what my town needs? It needs a big thing too. And you know what I think it should be? Fucking prawn, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably the Field of Dreams voice. But it's like genuinely not a good call.
If you build it, they will come. And it is a giant prawn.
Yeah. That's quite a reveal. Oh, no.
Or a medium-sized banana.
I used to live in Boston, and I used to walk to school going past Cheers. And it was just like, Jesus Christ, the amount of fanfare over Cheers did get annoying to me. I was like, eventually I was jaded where I was like, excuse me. Like, I was like, by the way, I was on my way to acting class, so it was perfect. I was like, pardon, I've got to go act. If you guys could just stop. I'm on my way to acting right now. I don't have time to like not worry about walking through your frame.
Yeah, I, as an actor, am annoyed by the thing that would be the greatest compliment paid to me, that I make something so iconically memorable that people will queue outside the actual bar just to relive and connect with a moment they'd experienced through the joy of professional entertainment. That repulses me. You people disgust me.
I'm so jealous of every actor who's on there because it's a dream job that I'm going to pretend like I lament it based on just artistic purposes, when deep down inside, I would literally do anything to have a piece of that, to be a guest star, to be a stand-in, to be an extra, to be anything, to put Ted Danson's hair on, to just fluff Kirstie Alley's hair. I'd do literally anything. But if you don't mind, right now I have to go do a monologue. Now, excuse me. Okay, so when you talk about the banana,
yeah,
I have a pretty good banana-ish story about a banana icon.
Okay, great.
Evan and I got a job, and we were going to do this thing for TBS here, and we were basically going to be going to like small towns and finding like local celebrities. Like in Milwaukee, where I'm from, there's the Milverine. This dude who looks like the Wolverine walks around with his shirt off, and he's the Milverine, and he's got like shirts and stuff. But basically, we're gonna go find these people and we're gonna hang out with them. And long story short, they hired a producer for us. We were sort of told we liked the idea, and we were sort of told that because we were on camera and producing it, that you know we would be able to pick the people and all this stuff. Well, then there was this weird miscommunication. We ended up working with this company that was just a nightmare, and they had hired this guy who had been like a producer on The Amazing Race to produce it, and he was like an older Hollywood guy,
right?
And he, you know, we'd be like, oh, we like this. He'd go, no, we're not going to use them, we're going to use someone else, you know. And he decided that the two local celebrities, because we needed to drive, because the budget was what it was, we had to make it drivable. And the first place was going to be this weird artist place, but the second place was going to be visiting with this guy called the Banana Man. And we like saw a video of the Banana Man, and he had this banana hut in the middle of like Palm Desert or something like that, or Salt and Sea basically. And he had this banana hut, and there really wasn't much. And he drove a banana car. He had a banana, and he dressed like a bit, you know, he had banana glasses, and he had like a banana museum in his little like shanty. And he just, it was what it was. And so we were like, yeah, okay, we'll go to the thing with Banana Man. And so when we get there, there's a fly problem in the place where we're shooting, like a literal, like, don't go outside fly issue, but we're shooting. So we're like, well, what the fuck, you know, we had to like, and so as we're sneaking into this guy who we eventually met's little shanty, he's losing his mind over the flies. He's like, keep the flies out, keep the fucking flies out. Like he's losing his mind over the flies. And then we meet him and he's not into it. He's not the Banana Man. We start to find out all these details as we peel the banana skin, if you will. And he's like not the Banana Man. There was another guy who was the Banana Man.
But hang on. So he is like not the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Exactly.
Like he's bought into the banana franchise. He's seen the success of the Banana Man, and he's just like, when the Banana Man's like, I've made enough money in this banana business that I've got to like get out of this. I got to, you know, end a Shawshank style. Like, yeah, go and meet a buddy of mine from prison on a beach.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We're going to build a boat together.
Right. Yes. A banana boat. yes, exactly. Yes. He's the Dalai Lama. The torch had been passed. But to him, it was a financial decision and one that was not super lucrative. And by the time we'd caught up with him, he hated bananas. And he would like turn it up on camera. But anytime he was a really negative guy. And anytime we were talking to him about bananas, he would just be like, I don't even drink them anymore. Like, I haven't had a banana. But then, like, when the cameras were on, he'd be like, yeah, this is like the banana hat. And this is like one of my favorite banana cowboy hats. And then we drove around in his banana car. He was an acerbic banana man who just hated. He was, when we were talking to him, he would be like, you know, I was making a lot of money making tennis courts before this, whatever that meant. But that was like what he had like specialized in. And now he was just in this weird little city in a shanty with all this banana memorabilia where there was a fly, like literal was like a forecaster's fly problem.
I mean, I want to know how he got there. Cause like, he's a guy who's making tennis courts as outdoor work. It's pretty nice. Like, tennis courts, you're around people who are probably pretty wealthy. Like,
yeah, he liked tennis. He liked tennis, too.
So you're around something that you love, and you get to pass on that love that you have for tennis for other people. You're literally making the thing that they get to play tennis on. It probably gives you a greater connection to the sport itself, because every time you walk out on a tennis court, you're assessing the quality of workmanship, and you know how much hard work went into the fact that somebody made the thing that you're now playing on. Like, you are defined on so many levels in a positive way by your connection with tennis courts and construction. And then one day you hear Gwen Stefani say this shit is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S. And you're like,
trend.
Hang on.
It's a sign. You know what it is? It shows you to not just take signs at face value. Not all signs are good ones.
That's not a good sign.
No.
Like, how has this happened? Like, how has it possibly happened? Is he at a bar one night and he meets the guy? Like, how is this relationship formed? Or is he just generally looking for a way out of tennis courts and he's found himself in the banana game?
And then, actually, the more I think about it, the more I think there was, like, a lawsuit with that guy, too. Like, he was in, like, a financial quagmire with the original Banana Man. So there was, like, certain language he couldn't use on camera.
He couldn't call them bananas.
No. He just called them, yellow taters.
But, sir, do you keep saying bananas? Have you put an extra na into there? Legally, that's what I have to refer to them as.
Technically, I am the banana nana man. So just, and when you guys put the lower third graphic up, no bullshit, it has to say that. I'll go to jail otherwise.
I am the banana nana man.
Yeah, I know. It sounds a little bit like the Batman theme. I'm the banana nana 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 nana.
That's my great-great-grandson. He'll be the banana.
If you go far enough, eventually my great-great-grandson, banana nana 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 nana, will inherit my legacy and empire, which is small and mainly flies now. Yeah. But it was like, it was just, and it was like the worst shoot. It was like, it was just the worst, everything about it just was the worst. But he was at the forefront where he was like, just hated it. The banana nana man.
Gareth, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for doing this. The dollop is coming down under New Zealand and Australia. Hopefully it'll all be sweet and fine and work out perfectly. We look forward to that. Point versus Point is the podcast that you do with Evan. And you have are you still doing Gariffs, or is that Gariffs
Garon? I think it's Garon. I think I'll do another one at some point, but with being gone so much, I just haven't done it. But I think I'll do one or two more maybe at some point.
But for American listeners, and I know there are plenty of them, particularly for these episodes, Gareth is on the road doing stand-up dates, and I assume that you can find all that information at GarethReynolds.com.
Will, you're a fantastic person, and you can find it all at GarethReynolds.com. And I am going all over. For your American listeners, I'll be in San Jose, Phoenix, Dallas, and Austin, and Spokane, and Tacoma.
And there are going to be some dollop US dates as well, so keep your eye out for those happening randomly around the country as it all opens up, hopefully healthily and successfully. And anyway, we'll check in when you're in Australia and we're fucking riding high on 7.5% immunity in our community and see how things are going.
I'll be like an X-Man. I'll be like, I can do whatever I want.
I mean, I'm sure everything will be fine as long as you're not in some job where you have to like travel over state borders constantly in different conditions. So I think everything will be fine.
Right. Yeah. Because that's not how tours are not designed for.
No.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll be.
You've calculated a 14-day quarantine every time you go across a border.
We're doing 2.5 weeks between shows. We're looking to lose money, and we're going to, and that's what's going to be awesome. So the plan is good. The margins are good for you guys. For us, it'll just be nice to be gone for 6 months out of the year to do 9 shows. So, yeah. Any hoozle be. Thank you as always, Will. It's always a pleasure. Till the end. Took a turn towards the end. But no, thank you.
Thanks, man.